State v. Frantz G. Kolbjornsson. Mr. Piccolo, good morning. I hope I got that close.
Well, Your Honor, the way I understand it, it should be Kolbjornsson, but I'm going to say Mr. Kolbjornsson. Good morning, members of the court. I am Gerard Piccolo, representing Mr. Kolbjornsson. This appeal deals with basically two statutes and another statute tangentially. 29-1207, 29-3805, and then tangentially 29-1205. Let me deal with the 1207 analysis first. The lower court, in a long detailed...
Wasn't your client at all relevant times a prisoner in the Nebraska prison system?
He was.
And haven't we said in the past, when that is the case, the 29-1207 does not apply, and you look solely to the in-state detainer statute?
And that's State versus Ebert, I think.
Yes.
That's what you're talking
Among
about.
Others, yes.
Yeah. That actually issue was never, ever decided by the lower court. So there wasn't anything that I think this court can review with regard to that particular issue.
Well, if it never should have been before the court, what effect does any ruling by the lower court have on an issue that never should have applied?
Well, I think there's long case precedent from this court that if the issue is not raised at the trial level, it doesn't get up to this particular court. And that would be my argument, my response to your question.
All right. Thank you.
And I would note, Your Honor, if you take a look at 1207, you will see nothing in the statutory language that says this doesn't apply to prisoners.
You're not asking us to overrule Ebert or Sewell or any of the other cases?
No.
That...
No.
All right.
As I mentioned,
Counsel, follow-up to that, help me out here. If you're saying that it wasn't before the trial court, so we shouldn't look at it, but the wrong statute was before the trial court, then do we have a final order?
Well, I think you have a final order. It's well recognized that a decision under 1207 is a final appealable order.
Correct, but again, let's just assume for sake of argument that that issue shouldn't have been before the trial court. It should have been under the other statute. Then if the court never ruled on the proper issue, then do you still believe that's a final order?
I do. I still believe that's a final order.
Okay.
What authority was the trial court proceeding under?
Well, I think it was proceeding... I'm a little unsure as to your question, Your Honor, but I think the court was proceeding under 1207, statutory 6 months, and it decided the issue based on the 6 months analysis, which is contained in the order. And I think that's a final appealable order, and the court then brought it up.
And if we were to conclude that folks were belaboring under the wrong statute, what disposition would you suggest at this level?
Well, as the court realizes, you also have the 3805 analysis coming up, which is, I think that's what you're trying to get to. Now, if you decided under 1207, or you decided under 3805, or you decided under both, the result is the same. Does that answer your question,
yes.
Your Honor?
Yes, thank you.
As I mentioned, the lower court seems to engage in this analysis of some sort of implied consent, despite my saying on the record, no, we don't agree to any waiver, or we don't consent to any waiver of a speedy trial. I can cite you, it's 35, line 33, I'm sorry, page 35, line 3 through 36, line 20.
But state on the record that your client didn't mind if the case wasn't tried that month.
Right, 6 days away.
Did you put an outer limit on when your client wanted the case to be tried?
Yeah, the 26th of August. I think that's what I was shooting for.
I think that's clear from the record, from the comments made in open court?
Yeah. Your Honor, I think the hearing... the plea hearing was held on August 12th, if I remember correctly. I said, Your Honor, if you want to try it next month, namely after the 26th, you would have 4 days until you get, I'm sorry, 5 days until you get to September. That's what I was shooting for. I was asking the court, if you want to delay it a week, we don't care. It's not a big deal. And that's what I was shooting for. I might have, maybe I used imprecise terminology, but I think the court, namely Judge Wright, understood what I was talking about because it was set for the 26th, and the next month would have been 5 days away.
But didn't you say, could we shoot for October?
Yes, I did say that. I was trying to give the court, let's advance it, let's see if we can advance it. But I also reserved the right, clearly I reserved the right, and I mentioned that specifically, I reserved the right to take up any matter concerning the scheduling on appeal. But I was asking the court, why do we have to wait until December? Why can't we do it now? Why can't we do it sooner than December?
Assuming that the only statute that's really before us is the in-state detainer statute,
correct.
What's your best argument that there was not good cause?
My best argument that there was not good cause are two things, really. One more procedural, Your Honor, and then the other basically just common sense. Procedurally, when I went to the appealee hearing on the 12th of August, nothing was mentioned about 3805. Nothing was mentioned about the intrastate detainer. We were there to determine whether the plea was going to be entered or not. In other words, whether there was a plea agreement or not. I think I told Judge Wright, no, there's no plea agreement. We're waiting for trial on the 26th when it was scheduled. And then we went through the convulsions about when to schedule it or not. So that's one thing. Procedurally, under the statute 3805, the defendant has to be given notice, specific notice, that this is what we're talking about, delaying the trial based on the request for speedy trial under 3805. The second matter is, we all agree that there was a courtroom available. There was a courtroom available. It's just a question of who could use the courtroom. Now, there's nothing in this record that says the courtroom wasn't available the day before the 26th, the day after the 26th, the week before the 26th, or the week after the 26th, which would have been complying with 3805, according to my computations in my brief. There's nothing in the record to say that this case couldn't have been tried on, let's say, the 27th, or the 28th, or the 1st or 2nd of September, or the 24th of August. Nothing in the record says that. The courtroom was available, at least that there is no evidence that the courtroom wasn't available on this record. That's also a very good argument.
Whose burden is it to create a record?
It's the state's burden to prove a legal excuse under the statute, 3805. All right? They didn't prove, the state did not prove that the courtroom wasn't available the week before, the week after, whatever it may be. They just didn't. There is no evidence in this record saying that the courtroom wasn't available, not necessarily on the 26th, but maybe the day before or the day after. Furthermore, there's another argument to be made, which is the argument concerning Mr. Taylor, which is, I think, or Tyler, whoever the case was on the 26th that was tried. Under 1205, Mr. Kolbjornsson was the highest priority because he was in jail and he requested a speedy trial. There's no evidence of record why Mr. Tyler's case was not delayed and Mr. Kolbjornsson's case was not tried on the 26th of August. That would be my best argument, Your Honor. And I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Klein, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, 29-1207 just doesn't enter into the equation. Once a defendant files for disposition of untried charges under 29-3801 and the statutes that follow, he falls ipso facto under the speedy trial, the 180-day speedy trial allotment provided for under that statute. I think the case law is clear on that. The only reason 29-1207 came into the matter is because there was a motion to dismiss filed under that particular provision as well as the untried charges provision. So that's where 29-1207 comes from. I think the only thing we need to concern ourselves with is the 29-3805 and whether or not good cause has been shown by the hearing before the district court. The evidence showed that, the Hall County Courthouse was apparently torn to pieces for a good part of the latter half of 2015, and there was literally one courtroom, one district court courtroom available. There were apparently only two available under the best of circumstances, and one of those...
Aren't there other places in Grand Island, Nebraska, that you could have a trial? Or couldn't you have this trial in Buffalo County or some adjoining county?
I suppose you could.
Wouldn't having it in an adjoining county require defendant's consent?
Yeah, I think it would. I think it would because the offense, basically the offense is to be charged and essentially tried in the county in which he was, in which the offense was committed, then I think you would have to get at least some sort of agreement to transport him down there.
County is an element?
Pardon me?
County is an element?
Yeah. And I think you would also have to go through the...
Did the state try to get consent from the defendant?
The record doesn't show that they did, no.
Is there any suggestion that the defendant requested to go to a different county?
There is not, no. Everyone seemed to be focused strictly on getting it tried in Hall County, which would be the logical choice since everything and everyone was from Hall County, including the defendant and the offense in this particular case.
And the witnesses, presumably.
Presumably, yeah. I guess the question is, how far do you have to go to ensure that he gets a reasonably speedy trial? And the question is whether or not what was done in the hearing constitutes good cause shown, as provided for under 2938.05. The district court determined that it did, and that's a factual determination, which, unless it's found to be clearly erroneous, should stand on appeal. Given the evidence that was adduced at that hearing, and the fact that there's, under the best of circumstances, two district court courtrooms, one of which was completely unusable. The ceiling was gone. They were doing all sorts of other things with it, which left one courtroom for two judges who were in Hall County full-time, and for Judge Wright, who apparently rotates between Hall and Buffalo County. So you've got three judges trying to squeeze...
Well, if this were a constitutional challenge, would that make a difference?
I don't think so. I think you still have to look at the various factors under the four factors under the constitutional challenge, and if you don't have a place to put him, you know that's got to factor into it. I suppose you could.
Whose burden is it to find a place to have the trial?
To find a place to try? I don't know that anybody has a burden to find a place to try, and what we have a burden to do is try him within given time limits with certain exceptions, and among those exceptions is good cause shown to extend beyond the statutorily set speedy trial time. And I think under these circumstances, if you simply don't have a place to hold the trial, that constitutes good cause. They got...
What if the county had decided to remodel all the courtrooms?
Well, I think they're going to. I think they just had sense enough not to do it all at once. I think they understood the fact that they need to have some place to conduct district court jury trials, and they had the one courtroom that was still intact, or at least intact enough to conduct a jury trial. They could hold hearings and whatnot in the county court courtrooms when those were available, but I've never seen a county courtroom with a 12-person jury box in it, so you obviously can't conduct a 12-person jury in a county courtroom, and most of the county courtrooms are about the size of this lectern anyway, so it would be awfully cramped and basically impracticable to try and do so. The evidence shows that the case was set as quickly as they could get it set into one of the courtrooms. And they had it originally set for August 26th. The state moved to move it up because they recognized that the detainer of the detainer issue on the speedy trial, so they moved it up to May. Defense counsel said, we can't be ready then. You've moved it up too much. So they set it back to the 26th, and at that point, the construction issue and the lack of a courtroom became basically the key issue to this thing. And the evidence that was adduced from the various bailiffs and the county clerks indicated that they were getting it set as quickly as basically all the factors that were falling into place and out of place would allow them to do so. I think the record as a whole clearly supports the district court's conclusion that good cause had been shown to get the matter set on for trial as soon as possible, as soon as practicable, and I don't think that that's clearly erroneous. Unless there are additional questions, we would ask that the ruling of the district court be affirmed and the matter be remanded to court for trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
We have a minute 26.
A minute and 26 seconds, Mr. Piccolo.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will simply submit it unless anybody else has any questions. I've already mentioned what our main arguments are, and I would ask the court to reverse the decision of the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is State versus Christopher M. Garza. Mr.